And I apologize in advance due to technical difficulties. I'm not able to share my screen tonight. So if you don't have a Sefer Shmuel in front of you, you can either listen along, or you can, if you have a Tanakh or a Sefer Shmuel near you, you can open that up and look along with me. Or if you have access to the internet, which presumably you do, you can look online. Chabad.org, which is the website that I usually use, has a wonderful. You can go to Chabad.org under Learning and find Shmuel Aleph, so you can look at the Psukim inside with English translation. Probably other websites also where you can find it, but certainly areas where you can find it on the internet. Okay, so we're learning Shmuel Aleph. We just began last week the Perek Aleph, and we actually read Pasuk Aleph, but I'm going to read it again this week, just to just to get a running start here. So the Sefer begins Shmuel Aleph. Mehar Ephraim. There was a certain man, one man. The Navi identifies him as, and he was from this place called Ramasayim Tzofim. Most understand that that was the name of the location where he was from. Probably refers to two hills. Maybe they overlooked each other, and it was from Har Ephraim. They say even though he was a Levi, this person obviously we're talking about Elkanah, as the pasuk continues, Ushmo Elkanah ben Yerocham, that his name was Elkanah the son of Yerocham, ben Elihu ben Tohu ben Tzuf Ephrasi, and he was a Levi. But even though he was a Levi, he lived in the area of Ephraim. As we know, the Shvatim had different cities that they allowed. That they allowed the Levim to occupy. Also, just want to mention that tonight's shiur is sponsored by Millie and Aaron Suede, in memory of Aaron's mother, Chana Bas Aaron, whose yahrzeit is tonight, and her neshama should have an aliyah. So, a couple interesting things about this pasuk we mentioned last week. Normally, we don't attribute too much importance and too much significance to Elkanah. Elkanah is a wonderful man, but he's really just the father of Shmuel. That's how we understand Elkanah's greatness. But here the Mefarshim point out that you see from this pasuk that Elkanah himself was chashuv. Elkanah himself was a significant person. Number one, it identifies him as Ish Echad. Ish Echad. Oh, thank you so much. Okay, so we have the psukim there in front of you. You can see them. Ish Echad means that he was a unique person. He was a special person. And some understand that the word at the end of the pasuk Ephrasi also means that that he was chashuv. So you see that Elkanah wasn't just a regular person, but Elkanah was a chashuv person. We saw last week that the Medrash compares Elkanah to Abraham and Moshe, compares it to Moshe because Moshe was referred to an Isha Elokim, and so too Elkanah is referred to as an Isha Elokim a little bit later in Perek Beis. We find also that he's compared to Avraham Avinu because Avraham Avinu was all about spreading the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Avraham Avinu did. He recognized monotheism, he recognized the love of Hashem, and he went around spreading that love of Hashem to everyone else. And Elkanah did the same, and we'll learn a little bit of how he did that. Okay, in fact, some say that the Alshich says that he was actually one of the greatest people that lived in that entire area, and some say he was actually introduced as Ish Echad, because he was a singular person that in his merit, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved the world. That really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to destroy the world, or wanted to destroy many people in the world, because of Pesel Micha, because of the terrible Avera. The Shevet Dan worshipped this idol of Pesel Micha, as we learned at the end of Sefer Shoftim. And in the merit of Elkanah, this singular individual, this one person, in the merit of Elkanah, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not destroy the world. So we see from this pasuk, the bottom line we see from many of the Mefarshim that Elkanah was certainly a very significant figure, a very important figure, and it wasn't just that he was the father of Shmuel, but he himself was an Ish Chashuv Me'od in his own right. Okay, continuing to Pasuk Beis, and here's where it gets interesting with his wives, and specifically, as we know, with Chana and the story of Chana and Penina. Velo shtei nashim. So Elkanah had two wives. Shem achas Chana. B'shem Hashenis Penina. He had one wife by the name of Chana and one wife by the name of Penina. These are names that we're familiar with. Vayihi lifnina yiladim ulachana ein yiladim. And the Navi says that there was one major distinction between Chana and Penina. Penina had children, and Chana did not have children. Now, when you just read the pasuk, it seems that he married two women. He married Chana and he married Penina. We know that the Torah allows a person to marry two women. Nowadays, Rabbeinu Gershom prohibited that, and we don't do that nowadays. That's not our practice, Baruch Hashem. It wouldn't work in our society for many, many reasons. But here, in these times, obviously in the times of Tanakh, it was something permissible. We learn all the time about the Avos, the different people, they have multiple wives. So you would think, that Elkanah just married two women, Chana and Penina. But the Medrash tells us, and the Mefarshim here quote it, the Malbim and the Alshich and others, that in reality, really, he was just married to Chana. That's who he was married to. And in fact, the Malbim is the great daikon, the Malbim is the grammarian par excellence. If you look at the language of the Pasuk, so the Pasuk reads, V'lo shtei nashim, shem achas Chana, v'shem hashenis Penina. So asks the Malbim, why isn't the pasuk consistent? Why does the pasuk say achas and then hashenis? Right? Why is it not both? So it should be either haachas and hashenis or achas and shenis. Why achas and then hashenis? So the Malbim points out that in reality, Chana was really the wife. Chana was the singular wife. She was really the only wife, and that's why it says Achas. She was really the only wife, but she didn't have any children. So since Chana did not have any children, she wanted children. So what did she do? So she took a lesson. She learned a lesson from her great 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 grandmother Sarah Imenu. What did Sarah do when she didn't have children with Avram Avinu? She allowed Avram to marry Hagar. So too, Chana took that lesson, she took that idea, and therefore she asked Elkanah to marry Penina, and this way she would have children through Penina, so to speak, and they would somehow be attributed to her. According to the, if you look at the Medrash inside, and the Alshech quotes it in this way, the Medrash actually says that she felt that maybe in the merit of her accepting upon herself a co-wife, it wasn't so easy to be a second wife, or even to have another wife in the same family. That was a very difficult thing for her. So for her to accept that upon herself and to accept the tsar and the distress that came with that relationship, in that merit she hoped that she would have a child. In that merit she hoped that she would have a child. But in the end, the pasuk says that she still wasn't successful. She still did not have a child. Even though she accepted Penina into the family, even though Penina ended up having children, but Chana herself did not have any children. The Psikta Rabasi, one of the Midrashim, says that that Penina actually had 10 sons. That after all of that, Chana had no children, but Penina already had 10 sons. And the there's a fascinating Alshich who says that, why was it that she wasn't granted children? And this is obviously a question that one can ask any time we were faced with the imahos, who were many, most of them, three out of four of them were akaros. So how do we deal with the fact that the imahos were akaros and did not have any children? So the Gemara, there's a famous Gemara in Yevamos where the Gemara says, in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak, Mipnei ma hayu avoseinu akurim, why was it that our avos and imahos were not able to have children? Most of them at first were not able to have children. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the tfilos of the tzaddikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the tzaddikim to daven. He desires the tfilos of the tzaddikim. Now, obviously, we cannot understand this 100% literally, because it almost sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kaviyachol chas v'shalom. He wants something, and therefore he's willing to punish someone else, or to cause tsar to someone else in order for him to get the tfilos. Obviously, that's not correct. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need our tfilos. We don't daven for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He doesn't, whether we davened or not, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not, so to speak, feel it one way or the other. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us the opportunity to come close to him. That's what it means, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mis'aveh l'tfilosam shel tzadikim. He wants to give the tzadikim, a way to connect to him. And that's through the tfilah. So, in essence, It says the Alshech that this is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevented Chana from having children, because he wanted her to daven, meaning he wanted her to have a connection. He wanted her to create that special connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that comes through tefillah. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from Chana, and that's why he prevented her at first from having children, and of course, he was going to grant her children. It's interesting. Well, we're not going to probably have time to get to it tonight, but we will learn that, you know, probably next week, we'll learn that many of the halachos of tefillah actually are learned from Chana. Many of those halachos. So it's really interesting. The Alshech says there's no coincidence. The fact that right after this this little parsha where we talk about Chana not having children and Penina having children, right after this we learn about Chana's tefillah. Because in essence, that was the whole point. The whole point was for Chana to daven. The whole point was for Chana to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to create that relationship, that kesher with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was the whole point of the lack of children here, and that's why we have this smichus. That's why we have this connection between Chana not having children here and Chana davening in the next several psukim. Again, like we said, which we'll probably cover Mirtz Hashem next week. Continuing to Pasuk Gimel, Ve'Allah ha'ish ha'hu me'iro mi'amim yamima. So this man, referring to Elkanah, still right, still referring to him as ha'ish ha'hu, he was the man, he was the singular individual, this special person, this ish chashuv me'od. He went up from his city mi'amim yamima. Machlokas Rishonim among the Mefarshim how to understand this mi'amim yamima. So most understand that he went once a year. There are those that understand the Targum Yonasan, and others understand that it means that he went for every single yontif. Every yontif, aliyah l'regel. Obviously, this one, there was no Beis HaMikdash yet. The Mishkan was in Shiloh. But he would go every yontif. He would go aliyah l'regel to Shiloh to come to the Beis HaShem, as the Pasuk says, lihishtachavos v'lizbavach l'Hashem tzevokos b'Shiloh, to come and to bow, which the Mefarshim say means to daven. They used to daven through hishtachavoya, through bowing, and to bring korbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shiloh. V'sham shnei b'nei Eli chafni u'finchas kohanim la'Hashem. And there you had the two sons of Eli, which they're going to play a relatively prominent role in several psukim. But the two sons of Eli, Chafni and Pinchas, they were the kohanim to Hashem. Now this is interesting. The pasuk says, number one, it says me'iro, that he went me'iro mi'amim yamima, he went every year. So first of all, Rashi points out, and this touches on what we mentioned earlier, that that Elkanah was compared to Avram Avinu. So Rashi mentions the Medrash that that every time Elkanah went, again, however you understand it, whether he went once a year, whether he went, you know, three times a year, different ways of understanding him among the Mefarshim. Some say he alone went once a year, and then the other two times he brought his family. I'm sorry, he brought his family once, and he went himself the other two times. There are different ways of understanding exactly what mi'amim mi'amima means. But whatever it means, the Medrash says that whenever he went up to Shiloh, he took a different route. Every time he took a different route. Why? Because he wanted to inspire the other people around him to come with him and to go up to Shiloh, to go up to the Mishkan, to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he would go, and on his way, probably he would stop. People would ask him, where are you headed? He said, I'm going to Shiloh. What are you doing there? And he would explain, and he would try to say, you know, why don't you come along? It'll be a good experience. It'll be a nice experience. You'll be able to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You'll be able to daven to Hashem. It'll be a great thing. So everywhere he went, his focus was not just on himself and not just on his family, not just on his own personal growth, but his focus was on the people around him. And that's what Avram Avinu was all about. And that's why the Medrash says that he's compared to Avram Avinu. Because just like Avram Avinu recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu and did whatever he could to spread that recognition to the other people of the world and to get everyone else around him to recognize Hashem, to connect with Hashem, that's what Elkanah was really all about as well. And he wanted everyone to do the same. And that's why he every time he went, he took a different route. It's interesting. It says that he went Me'iro, which you know, is kind of obvious. Of course he went Me'iro. Where else would he go? Where else would he go from? Of course he went from his city. So the Radak says that he went, the reason why the Pasuk says Me'iro is because he really went from his city and he tried his best to encourage the people of his city and to persuade the people of his city to go to Shiloh just like he was going. In the end, the Mefarshim say, the Radak says, it didn't really work and most of the people did not listen and they did not join him. But Me'iro, meaning this was his city, he did his ishtablus in his city as well, that he really wanted to go up and to bring everyone with him and to make this into a big deal, that everyone should come and everyone should do this aliyah regel to Shiloh, to the Mishkan, to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to bring karbanos. I saw the Radak also mentions a fascinating medrash. The medrash says that you see from this pasuk, the pasuk says lehishtachavos velizbavach laHashem. It mentions these two things, that Elkanah and his family went up to daven and to bring karbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the medrash, he quotes a medrash that brings two different opinions. One opinion says you see from this pasuk that tefillah and karbanos are equal, because the pasuk here says lehishtachavos velizbavach laHashem, that Elkanah went to do these two things. It seems to put them on equal footing, and tefillah and karbanos are exactly the same. The second opinion in the medrash says that you see from here that tefillah is actually more powerful than karbanos. Why? Because what's the order in the pasuk? Lehishtachavos comes first, to daven, and then levilizbavach laHashem. So you see that of the two, tefillah versus karbanos, which is the more potent, which is the more powerful? The more powerful is the tefillah. And it's, you know, I found it to be a fascinating insight of the medrash, and certainly for us, who, unfortunately, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, we don't even have a Mishkan, we don't have a place where we can go and bring karbanos. All we have is tefillah, and even now we don't even have our Mikdash Ma'at, but unfortunately we're all davening b'yichidus, and we can't even come together with a minyan to daven. But it's a little bit of a nechama for us, that even though we can't bring karbanos, even though we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, we don't have the Mishkan, but we have tefillah. And tefillah, according to these two opinions, is either equal, or it's even greater than karbanos. So Baruch Hashem, we have this opportunity to take advantage of the tefillos, and we have to make sure to do it. Eli, we know, was the Kohen Gadol. We mentioned this last week. Eli was the shofet, the final shofet following Shimshon, and Eli was also the Kohen Gadol at the time, and his two sons, Hophni and Pinchas, were the Kohanim, the assistant Kohanim, so to speak, and that's why it mentions them here. It's interesting, some of the Mefarshim, the Malbim and others mention that, why does it say Hophni and Pinchas at the end of this pasuk? You know, why do we care the fact right now? We're not talking about Hophni and Pinchas yet. We have several other psukim, you know, until we get to the story with Hophni and Pinchas. So why are we mentioning them now? So the Malbim says that perhaps it's a shevach to him that many other people did not do the Aliyah L'Regel because of Hophni and Pinchas. There were many other people that weren't interested in coming to Shiloh. Why? Because Hophni and Pinchas were the Kohanim, and they weren't really great people. They were doing things that were improper, that people didn't trust them. And because of that, people didn't want to go up to Shiloh. And yet, despite all of this, Elkanah went up. Despite the fact that Hophni and Pinchas were there, despite the fact that they weren't the best, and they weren't doing everything that was really necessary. But nevertheless, Elkanah went up because he knew it was the right thing to do. And I think this is also such an important lesson for us. You know, there's a saying in English, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, right? That sometimes, you know, sometimes we're upset about this or we're upset about that, and we end up, you know, just throwing the whole thing away. We end up not coming at all. You know, something's bothering us about somebody in shul. You know, we don't go to shul. We go to a different shul. We go to a different minyan. You know, we don't come at all. There are so many good things. There are so many positive things. You know, something happened at work. Something happened with the family. Details, you know, minor things, minor hiccups, so to speak, that happen in our lives, and very often we harp on those and we say, you know, and it stares us, it disrupts us. We can't function. We can't operate properly, you know, because of this person is there and he said this or she said that or she looked at me the wrong way, and all of these, you know, little minor details, which in the grand scheme of things are really very minor, but to us, They upset us, and very often we end up throwing out the baby with the bathwater. We end up, you know, throwing out the whole thing, not coming at all, not gaining when we really could gain so much and we really can grow so much because of this, some of these slight things that bother us, that irk us. The Malbim also points out that here we specifically mention the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Tzvakos, the Lizbach LaHashem Tzvakos, and he says that this alludes to the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos elaborates on Chana's negotiations with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we'll talk about a little bit more next week when we focus on her tefillah. But Chana came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're called Tzvakos. which means that you've created so many legions, so many different things in this world. You've created people, you've created the planets, you've created animals, you've created so many things in this world, and you can't just give me one child. That was one of the arguments that Chana brought to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with that, she used the name Tzvakos. And therefore, the Pasuk says here, Lashem Tzvakos, alludes to that name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of that argument of Chana. The Alshech actually throws in that the fact that Chafni and Pinchas were not the greatest, so that's really why he only goes Miyamim Yamima. That's why Elkanah only went once a year. The Alshech goes without understanding. He only went once a year, and he says he only went once a year because of the presence of Chafni and Pinchas, and that they really disrupted and they really were not pleasant people to be around. Okay, Pasuk Dalet continues. Vayhi Hayom. Vayizbach Elkanah, and it was the day. It was the most Mefarshim understand. It was the day of Yomtiv. The Medrash says that this was actually referring to Shavuos. Vayizbach Elkanah. Elkanah brings a korban. V'nasan lifnina ishto ulechol baneha. And these are korbanos these were shlamim korbanos where the owners of the korban could eat some of the korban. So he gives out some of this meat to Penina, his wife, and to her children. Ulechol baneha uvno seha. Gives to Penina and to her sons and her daughters. Manos, he gives them portions. And this was for Simchas Yontav. The Malbim says Simchas Yontav, as we know, Ein Simcha Ela Bebasar. And of course, that's the only true joy is with meat. That's of course referring really to the meat of the korbanos. We take it nowadays to mean just meat in general, and that's why we have meat on Yontav, because that's a Simchas Yontav. But that's what he did for Penina. He gave Penina and all of her children portions from the korbanos. What about Chana? Pasuk Hey, ulechana yitain mana achas apayim, and to Chana he gave one mana apayim. Now many, many different interpretations of apayim we'll come to in a minute. Ki es Chana ahev v'Hashem sagar rachma, because he loved Chana, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu sealed her rechem. He sealed her womb. He did not allow her to conceive. So some understand that this mana achas apayim was actually a special portion. Rashi says that it means that there was because of his love for her, he gave Chana an extra special portion because of his love for her. The Radak says also Apayim means he gave her a very nice portion to appease her anger. Apayim from the language of Af, like Charon Af, the anger, that she had a certain anger about her, that she didn't have any children. In order to appease that anger, he gave her a nice portion. He gave her something special. The Radak quotes two more understandings. One was that there was a Medrash that says Apayim means that her face showed no jealousy. That even though Penina got all of these portions for her, for her children, but Chana wasn't jealous. Chana was very happy with her lot. She wasn't jealous. We'll see in a little bit that she did end up being jealous. And then interestingly, he quotes a pshat from his father. I don't remember in other places where he quotes his father, the Radak, not that I've seen all the Radaks, but some of the Radaks that I've seen, I don't remember him quoting his father, certainly not often. And he quotes his father here, and he says that he gave it to her out of anger, that he was angry, that Elkanah was angry, that here, I love this woman so much, I love Chana so much, he has Chana ahev, and still HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Saga Rachma, that Elkanah was angry. He was angry that she wasn't granted any children. And because he gave it to her, the special portion, he gave it to her out of anger. The Alshech points out here that, before the Alshech, the Mitzudas David says that he showed her more love because of her pain. Because she was in so much pain for not having children, therefore, ki es chana ahev, therefore he showed her more and more love because of that. The Alshech understands here that he actually gave her more. He didn't just give her a special portion, but he gave her more than she was due. And he says that he actually split it up into thirds. And he gave Chana one third of all of the meat, and then he gave Penina and her children two thirds. So obviously Penina and her children were much more than, Penina was one person and she had 10 sons and some daughters. They had many people. So she really deserved much more than two thirds of the portions. But he split it up like that. And he understands that Apayim means that Penina became angry. Penina became angry with jealousy because Chana was getting this preferential treatment. She was getting these extra portions. And Chana was also angry at not having children. So everyone's angry. That's the double language of Apayim in the plural. That Chana's angry she doesn't have children. Penina's angry and she's jealous that she's getting that that Chana's giving, you know, that Chana's being treated specially. And because of this, you know, there's a lot of anger. Everybody's angry. We see that the Penina ended up abusing her because of this. If you look at Pasuk Vav, v'chiasata tzarasa gam kas, that Penina began to get her angry. She began to upset her. She began to verbally abuse her. Gam kas, Rashi says, again and again, time and time again, she would verbally abuse her. She would make fun of her. She would poke fun of her. The Medrash says, the Gemara says that she did, that she would say, oh, you know, have you bought anything for your children today? Oh, you know, I forgot, you don't have any children. You know, she would really, she would really dig the knife in and make her feel really badly about the fact that she didn't have any children. However, says Rashi, quoting Chazal, quoting the Gemara in Bava Basra, that this wasn't because Penina was a Rasha. This wasn't because Penina just wanted to terrorize her, just wanted to upset her. Ba'avur harima. It was so that so that Chana would cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki sagar Hashem ve'ad rachma. That Penina wanted Chana to daven. Chana wasn't davening with enough conviction, with enough kavana for her to have children. And Penina wanted to get her to daven. And Penina thinks to herself, how am I going to get her to daven? So Penina therefore causes her tsar. And the more tsar that she causes her, the more desperate Chana becomes, the more upset Chana becomes. And therefore Chana she has to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to daven for children. The Baal Shem Tov here quotes this Gemara and says that the Gemara lumps Penina together with the Satan. That just like the Penina was L'shem Shemayim, so too the Satan, when he accused Eov of different things, was also acting L'shem Shemayim. And the Baal Shem Tov says that this shows you that just because you have good intentions, it doesn't justify the cruelty. And in fact, Penina, ended up losing 8 of her 10 sons. 8 of her 10 sons ended up dying because of this cruelty, that even though she was L'shem Shemayim, she was trying to get Chana to daven so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would grant her children, but nevertheless, it did not justify the ends, the means, I'm sorry, the end did not justify the means, that she wasn't able to express all of this cruelty to get her to daven. Okay, I think we're out of time for tonight. Thank you very much for joining me. Hashem, we'll pick up tomorrow night with Chana's Tefillah, and I turn it now over to Rabbi Orly and Shlita.